It really became violent. Again, all the joyriding stopped. It wasn't just, hey, we're just screwing around, you know, trying to see what we can do with computers. It became criminals doing it to make money. You know, it became nation states doing it as an act of war that no one wants to talk about. So it became what I would say just more violent.
You're listening to OMAG All Access, a podcast about all things affecting municipalities in Oklahoma, hosted by OMAG Director of Technology Services, Kevin Seesaw.
This is Kevin Seesaw, CIO and Director of Technology Services of the Oklahoma Municipal Assurance Group, and this is OMAG All Access. With me today is Scott Klazowski, the founder of Future Point of View, lovingly referred to as FPOV. He's also an international speaker, author, and podcaster himself. I believe your podcast is called The Digital Optimist.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, Kevin, how did you go into that James Earl Jones voice mode? Because we were just talking and your voice was not that low, and now you're making me feel bad about myself.
Oh, I've got my airline pilot voice.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to have to work on that.
Make sure and look out the right side of the window if you
want. That is excellent.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of your role, how you got into technology, and what you find yourself doing in terms of all the companies you've founded and the work you've done through technology.
Wow. Technology is all I've ever been in for over 30 years. So I started off at 18 years old and taught myself how to program and been in technology ever since. And I went through years of building startups and was thankfully blessed to have more work than didn't work. And then just really got changed from a point in time where I was interested in building companies to just being interested in helping other people. And that's when I moved more towards just speaking and consulting, because I really have a passion for just using the skills I have in technology now to try to be a blessing to other people.
I see. Now, ostensibly, our topic here today is cybersecurity, and of course, OMAG's focus is going to be municipal governments in Oklahoma. And that's something that FPOV, as is the case with a lot of technology companies, found themselves deep in the middle of. Now, I know that's a piece that FPOV is spearheading, but we'll talk here in a minute about what FPOV has been doing through things like the Cybersecurity Coalition. But Oklahoma, I've now heard from several others, is becoming kind of an oasis of cybersecurity partnerships and groups and communication. We're really finding ourselves here in this state in a role where we're kind of leading the charge. We communicate and partner better as cybersecurity professionals in this state, better than most other states. And it's you talk about passion and you talk about wanting to help other people. And I think we find that in the cybersecurity world, probably, especially here in Oklahoma, more than any other field in technology. We'd love to get out of our chairs and away from our monitors and work together in this world. And cybersecurity is a dark topic right now. So I'm glad I'm talking to the digital optimist and we can kind of figure out, you know, what's there to be happy about instead of all of the bad news that we hear about practically daily.
Yeah, that's going to be a little bit of a challenge, isn't it? talking about being optimistic about cybersecurity, but I am an eternal digital optimist, and so I think we can find a few rays of sunshine. But I agree with you on Oklahoma. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. And in
go
Cleveland,
Browns.
yeah, go Browns, which we can say this year,
yes,
right?
Finally.
This year. You know, I didn't know my neighbors, literally did not know my neighbors one or two houses over, you know, when I grew up in Cleveland. It's just, it's not a community-oriented area like Oklahoma is. And I think you see that in security, that there's a more willingness to share, there's more willingness to help each other here, like there is with anything. And that's what makes it a bit unusual around cybersecurity, is that I think we do have a little bit better ability to collaborate here than some states do.
Now, I know when I got into cybersecurity, it's one of those things through most of my technical expertise I fell into randomly, found myself in this role of needing to become an expert on something and just dove right in until finally I figured out, oh, hey, I actually know a decent amount about this. I've had a number of subspecializations in technology, database, assistive technology, et cetera, and it's usually completely random. But for you, in your role, was it one of necessity? How did you find yourself becoming a cybersecurity guru and speaker and hopefully optimist?
Yeah, well, a whole different journey. So the nice thing about podcasts is you can't see how old we are. There's no camera on right now. I'm quite a bit older than Kevin is. Kevin, when I started back in the 1980, the first cybersecurity that I ran into was 5 1/4 inch floppies. Mm. Like, so people would do, I would say more, we called it just vandalism with a piece of software or a floppy, where it would put a little program on your computer if you put a floppy in, and on Valentine's Day it would float a heart across your screen, right? I mean, it was just people doing
pranks.
Pranks. Graffiti. Exactly. Yeah. That was kind of where I started, was having a client call in 81 or 82 and saying, hey, I got little jumpy men flying across my screen, and us having to explain, oh, well, here's the reason, right, that happened. That was kind of where my journey started, was before it was crime, right? Mm-hmm. When you're right, when it was just people kind of having fun at everybody else's expense. So I got into it then, just understanding, what was happening. Now, fairly quickly, you got some people that they were bad-hearted,
yeah,
and they wanted to screw up a FAT table. Right, a file allocation table. So their version of fun was not flying a happy heart across the screen. It was you put this 5 1/4 floppy in, and it was going to screw up your file allocation table, and your computer was torched.
Yeah,
and that was the first time, and we're talking in the 80s, that I realized, wow, it can be dangerous swapping materials like 5 1/4 inch floppies, right, or diskettes, right, when they were 3 1/2 inch. That's where I started back in that journey, and I got into it only because I was selling computers, or we were doing things like that, and we would get these calls of, hey, what happened? Mm-hmm. And it was all very fuzzy in the early days of, like, what's going on? But you kind of knew somebody did something and put something in this machine that caused it to go haywire. So that's where, that's kind of where the journey started with me. About probably 18, 19 years ago, we started, when the internet first came out, that amplified things, because now you didn't need to swap a floppy, right, to get infected. The virus didn't have to pass through floppies. A virus could pass through the internet into a network and proliferate much greater. And that's when I started getting really serious about, man, I better understand this. I better understand how to advise clients on what to do about it, how to protect against it. So in the early days, like a DDoS attack, mm-hmm, right, a denial of service attack, early on in the internet, people started figuring out that you could do that type of attack and bring down a website. And again, in the, the first times it happened, it was joyride. It was just people playing to see if they could do it. But pretty quickly, it got to be, we're doing it because we're bad-hearted. Like, there's a reason we're trying to bring something down. And so that caused me to start, I think, a journey, in trying to understand defense versus offense when it comes to technology. Because I love being an optimist. I love the offense side. What's all the cool things we can do with technology to help the world?
Yeah.
And I realized that I was going to need to be equal, offense and defense, probably the rest of my career. So that's how it started for me.
Interesting. And you talk about 20 years ago. That's when I started really getting into the field. And so, yeah, I started seeing some of these earlier viruses, not the Michelangelo virus from the 90s or the original internet worm from the 80s, but some of these things like CIRCAM and the I Love You email virus and, mm-hmm, and those big ones. When I think it really started to take hold in enterprises, corporations, governments, these viruses are annoying and they're bothersome and they're taking things down and causing problems. And, it was still really just relegated to the IT people running around and trying to clean things up. And now I think the shift over the last few years has become everybody is aware of it. It's everybody's problem. And nobody thinks to themselves as just an IT person that needs to run around and care about this.
Yeah, it's true. I think the other thing that happened was probably a decade ago or so, people got violent with with cyber attacks. I mean, it became about the money. It really became violent. Again, all the joyriding stopped. It wasn't just, hey, we're just screwing around, you know, trying to see what we can do with computers. It became criminals doing it to make money. You know, it became nation states doing it as an act of war that no one wants to talk about. So it became what I would say just more violent 10 years ago. And then now we see the results. And you're right, there's nobody today who doesn't understand that cyber crime is a terrible thing.
OMAG All Access would like to thank you for listening to this podcast. For your time, we would like to offer you the chance to win a pair of OMAG All Access Bluetooth headphones. To enter, all you have to do is head to www.omag.org/allaccess and click on the corresponding image at the top of the screen. The password for each episode will change, so make sure you are always up to date on the newest episode of OMAG All Access by subscribing with your favorite podcast app. The password for this episode is cyber. Follow the directions on the giveaway page and you will be entered. Good luck.
So I want to talk a little bit about your firm, FPOV, and what your role is. But first, FPOV and OMAG have an interesting history and a relationship that is a little bizarre, especially considering the fact that we're entire feet apart in terms of offices. Now, tell us a little bit about the OMAG-FPOV relationship building and how that had first started.
Yeah, I remember the day like it was yesterday. We were in Coeur d'Alene, you know, all the way across the country. I was doing a workshop with one of our other people, Andrew Ranson, and I'm up talking and I look at the back of the room. There's 100 people in the room. I look at the back of the room and there's two guys in Oklahoma City Thunder shirts. And I thought, well, that's random, you know, that they would be. So I went to the back when I was done talking and I said, hey, why do you guys have Thunder shirts on? And they said, well, we're from Oklahoma City. And I said, well, I'm from Oklahoma City. And they said, yeah, we're with OMAG. And, you know, it's one of those things where I was thinking, OMAG, that's very familiar to me. And it took a second. And I realized every day when I drive in the parking lot, there's a big OMAG sign. And I'm like, you're right across the parking lot from us. And yeah, it was that random, right, that we met in Coeur d'Alene. And then, you know, since that point, you know, we've just had a good relationship, thankfully, not just on the defense side, right? You know, a little bit on the offense side as well. And, you know, we do a lot of work in the risk pool space. Mm-hmm. We care a lot about the mission, you know, of risk pools. And so we've loved working with OMAG.
OMAG All Access listeners will remember a few episodes ago, I spoke with Chad Nolan about our digital strategy, our business planning. It's kind of the boring but more offensive, good planning side of IT. And it's been a hard lesson for any organization to learn and especially to pass on, because it's just your fundamentals. There's no, you know, there's not the thrill of the chase with cybersecurity.
No. Nope.
So with FPOV, tell us about the role with cybersecurity, particularly, I want to hear a little bit more about the Cybersecurity Coalition.
All right. So as the name would suggest, future point of view, when it comes to digital strategy, we're future leaning. So we don't say we're futurists. We just say, hey, when it comes to helping clients, companies, organizations be very good at digital strategy, we try to play a role of helping them understand what's coming over the next 3 to 5 years and get ready for that. In cybersecurity, the role, we do some of the mechanics. We might help with audits, or we might help do risk analysis, or help with event response. We might do things like that for clients. I would say what we do that's most important is we help clients understand what are the latest things you need to be doing with cybersecurity. So right now, we're deep into DERP, right? Digital Event Response Playbooks. Mm-hmm. How do you build digital event response playbooks? How do you do training of your people? How do you do tabletop scenario exercises? because it's different than disaster recovery, you know, tabletops. Yes. So you know, we're always looking for the edge of things. Another thing would be when you are firing or letting go IT person that has the keys to your kingdom. Mm-hmm. How do you do that extraction? You know, that's something a lot of people don't think about, don't know about. You know, that's a bit of a new area, is how to do extractions of IT people. So that's kind of the role we play, is we do some of the basics around cybersecurity to help clients. But I think what's unusual about us is that pushing the boundaries into the future of helping leaders understand you can't be two steps behind criminals.
Yeah.
You cannot, whether those criminals are internal employees or external. You have to be out in front of the criminals with what you're doing. So that's a role we play. Now, the Cybersecurity Coalition was something that we started because we had participated in like InfraGuard, mm-hmm. thing, you know, that the FBI had set up. And what we were finding is companies were scared to tell their story. They were scared to help each other in a peer review format. And so we wanted to start something that was more peers, NDA, you know, non-disclosure, everybody, and allow people to tell their stories about what happened and what they're doing about it, while also trying to provide some interesting thought-leading content. And then the other component was changing governmental policy.
Yeah.
Right? Because we just didn't see anyone who was really working with legislators to try to change policy. And so we formed the Cybersecurity Coalition, and, you know, it's all voluntary. It's, you know, no one's getting paid to do any of this kind of thing. It's just, you know, hey, let's get together as a community, try to help with legislation, but also try to help each other. So that's what the PSYCO, Cybersecurity Coalition, is.
Lovingly referred to as
PSYCO.
Yeah. That usually gets a few raised eyebrows when I mention I'm going to a PSYCO meeting.
Because when I look at you, I think PSYCO. Okay.
Not the only one.
It fits you.
Now, you mentioned InfraGuard. Full disclosure, I'm an InfraGuard Oklahoma board member. I think, you know, there's dozens of these groups popping up all throughout the state, whether or not they're interrelated because they're part of they're a chapter of a nationwide organization, or they're just offshoots, various subgroups, et cetera. You've got ISACA, ISSA, the list goes on. Every last one of them has at least a few different people, if not completely different people, involved in them. Every last one is pulling on this hairball in a slightly different way, trying to untangle and unravel this hairball in a different way. And again, it's like we're all working towards the same goal. There's just so many different ways that we can all approach this: technical, leadership, strategic, etc. And you mentioned the legislative piece. Tell me a little bit about that and the successes there that the PSYCO has had.
Well, Oklahoma, let's speak about Oklahoma, not national at this point. In Oklahoma, the laws covering anything digital are kind of outdated. And one of the things criminals benefit from is really a lack of law enforcement being able to hold them accountable in some cases, or a lack of funding. I mean, there's just there are reasons why the deck is stacked against law enforcement. So at the same time that Oklahomans are being robbed of millions and millions of dollars through digital fraud, or companies are being robbed of millions and millions of dollars through ransomware and things like that, our legislature hasn't really engaged, you know, that much in that battle at all. Yeah. And I don't think it's because they don't want to. I think it's they don't know how. You know, we don't have a bunch of cybersecurity experts who are getting elected.
That's true.
So I think the role we wanted to play with PSYCO is just to help. We want to, and I mean over long term, not just, hey, let's try to fix everything this year. It's just over time, let's get legislators to be aware of this, to put some bills forward, and, you know, let's try to improve the laws in Oklahoma faster than let's just copy California. Because right now, a lot of the states, they kind of just copy California a few years later sometimes. And I would really like Oklahoma to think about cybersecurity is how do we protect our citizens? How do we protect our companies? And how could we be one of the top states of putting good legislation in place?
So what do you think needs to happen beyond just updating, you know, taking out the word floppy disk in legislation or whatever the situation may be? What's next to try and get us beyond that California curve and really start leading the charge on protecting citizens?
Yeah, great question. And you're right. I mean, we do need to get floppy disk language out, right? But I guess there's a few different guideposts for me. One of them is we need to really review what the consequences are. So when a criminal is caught that has damaged an Oklahoma person or company, if the consequences are so light or so small, then there really isn't a lot of barrier for why they do what they do. And if you look right now, the FBI says that the mob, the mafia 2.0, they say they make more money from ransomware than drugs. So, or cybercrime, you know, than drugs. And I think about that. They made billions and billions of dollars from drugs, but they now make more money from cybercrime than drugs. Well, on the criminal side, when they're interviewed, they say, oh my gosh, this is the best crime ever. Right? You do it remote. You can do it anywhere from anywhere. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have people on the ground. No one's bleeding. You don't have to shoot anybody or kill anybody. There's no cameras looking at you, right? Who are going to catch you and put it in a trial.
There's no bank vault to drill into.
Yeah, exactly. And in some cases, we just hire programmers to go do the dirty work, and they don't even know who we are. So as far as a crime, I mean, Kevin, the more I talk about it, the more I'm thinking you and I could form our own team.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's just attractive to criminals. Well, we are not doing a whole lot in Oklahoma to make it where a criminal would say, whatever you do, don't do fraud in Oklahoma. Whatever you do, don't send a crew to put skimmers into ATMs in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Because if you get caught putting skimmers in Oklahoma, you're going to jail and you're never coming back. Right. They know if they get caught putting skimmers on an ATM, yeah, maybe they see 30 days of jail time and they're back out.
And that's if they get caught. It is so hard to catch these criminals. I mean, I have heard the statistics before that, you know, a bank robbery gets you a few thousand dollars and an 85% chance of actually getting caught and going away for years and years. But cybercrime, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, and the chance of getting caught is a couple of percent. From a cost benefit standpoint for the criminals, it is definitely worth it. Now, you mentioned, you know, you and I could start something, and I'm a good guy. I'm not just an optimist. I'm definitely the white hat. But one thing that's always fascinated me is the red teaming, the idea that you can, for the good guys, try and break in and do penetration testing and stuff like that, and say, okay, and now here's what we did and how we succeeded, which I know is a big part of audit and assessment. And it's a lot more intriguing than the boring fundamentals that you talk about, the tabletop exercises, the incident response plans. But that stuff is so critical. I mean, it's just like, I mean, well, we talked about the thunder a minute ago. Before you dunk, you got to learn how to shoot a free throw.
We don't want to leave you wanting more, but to keep your time in mind, this segment will be continued on the next episode of OMAG All Access. We hope you can take something away from this podcast that will help your city or town. You can find more information about OMAG on our website at www.omag.org or on our Facebook page. Thanks for listening. If you have questions or ideas for a podcast topic, please send them to allaccess@omag.org. This episode is copyright OMAG 2021 under the Creative Commons 4.0 Attribution, Non-Commercial, Non-Derivatives International License. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.